of witchcraft.
I was able to see, hear, and communicate with spirits.
A very personal relationship between a person and spirit.
Carnal lust and fun things like that.
Working with different energies and spirits and communicating.
Creating magic.
Powerful ritual and powerful spells.
She's actually sticking me in the cauldron.
The role of the witch is to make change.
Bless it be, y'all.
Bless it be.
People ask me, like, okay, I'm a witch and I don't know what to do.
20 years ago, three young friends realized they were witches.
They scattered to different parts of the world, following magic and spirit.
Now, they're back in their hometown to share what they've learned.
Welcome to That Witch Life Podcast, your home for living as a witch in today's world.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to our fifth episode. Today, we're going to be discussing goddess worship, and all that that entails, and how the goddess has impacted our lives, and the different ways that we may invoke the goddess or speak to the goddess, things of that nature. This is your host, Kanani, and I am surrounded by my other co-hosts, Courtney and Hillary.
Hey!
Hello!
And we are excited you're joining us again.
Yeah, I mean, like, we've actually had more listeners and fewer people have dropped off. So far as we know, nobody has reported us to the Facebook police, which is pretty exciting.
That's true. So I was going to start with something that is completely hilarious to me and probably and not even remotely magical related, although my children think it was. So my daughter is currently taking a Spanish dance class, which she is loving. And as anyone who's seen Spanish dancers know, their dresses are incredible and gorgeous and ornate and everything that I fear, because they fall into the category of dry clean only, which is a bad word in my house.
Yeah, I don't do that in my house. I just wash it.
I have very few things.
The skirt I'm wearing, guys, I actually wore in high school. This was my choir skirt.
And
it's falling apart, but it's dry clean only. And guess who does not dry clean?
Yeah,
who throws it in the washing machine?
Yes.
That would be me.
That's what happens. Yeah. So the dance instructor who has been teaching Spanish ballet for decades. And so she is very into the minutia of their costumes and how they look and all this. So she gives me this red sash that needs to go around my daughter's dress. And it's beautiful and it's silk. And she's like, yeah, you'll need to iron this before the next performance.
No.
And all the color flushes from my face. And I'm just like, oh, my iron.
Isn't that what your husband does? Isn't it your husband's job?
It should be, because he's the only reason we have an iron in the house. It was his that I'm sure he was gifted from his grandmother or his mother as a hand-me-down at some point in his life. So he does have an iron. It was not mine. And this morning, I finally procrastinate to the last second of when this thing has to be ironed. I don't even own an ironing board. So I have to put a towel on top of the dryer and plug in the iron. And as this is happening, my children are noticing that this is, what is this magical machine? What is happening right now? They're completely obsessed. I light candles. We smudge. We have incense. We do all kinds of obscure magical things. None of that interests them. That's just what we do. This magical machine that comes off of a shelf that has never come off the shelf before is now
sprays things. Like, it's steam.
It's now incredibly fascinating. And I know, and it steams and it makes the sizzle noise. So I'm trying to figure out how I'm going to jerry-rig this on the top of the dryer. I put a towel down. I'm very delicately laying out this beautiful scarf that I'm absolutely terrified I'm going to ruin. My daughter's watching me in amazement, and her eyes are all lit up. And I'm very carefully ironing this beautiful red sash. And all of a sudden, my daughter goes running out. She has to get my son, because she has to bring him in to see the wonder that is mom ironing. And she's like, look. It's like magic. It takes,
oh my God.
She's like, it takes the wrinkles away. Look, Gavin, it makes
oh
it flat.
Oh my God.
And she goes, now it'll never wrinkle again. And I have to take the iron up and I look at her and I said, no, it will wrinkle again, which is why you will be careful with this, because mommy is never going to try and do this again. So once this is ironed, this needs to stay perfectly still.
Oh God.
But it just made me laugh that of all the magic that we have in our house and all the things that we do and all the things that we practice, this is what my children are in awe, amazement over, is mom attempting to iron
a
red scarf on the dryer.
Kanani, nobody's surprised by this at all. I'm not. I don't want to speak for Hillary, but she doesn't look shocked.
Not
She's
shocked.
Just kind of going, yeah.
Domesticity is not, it's not my bag. I can run an errand with the best of them.
I'm like, do I really have to iron this thing? Like, I don't want an outfit. I travel too much to have things that require me to iron them before I wear them.
I am a throw it in the dryer with a wet towel and let the steam work
or
its way.
Or stick it in the bathroom while you're taking a shower.
Yeah, I've done that. Well, last time I was ironing something was placemats because my mother was coming over for dinner.
Oh,
and that has met my mother. Wrinkled table linens are a big no-no. And it was funny, I was on the phone with my sister and asking her, hey, is it okay if I don't give your kids the good plates because they're kids? And she goes, oh, that's totally fine. I said, well, meanwhile, I'm just trying to get... No, my sister was like, oh, just relax. It's just the family. Who cares? I'm like, well, I'm trying to get these placemats ironed. She goes, yeah, you need to do that.
Exactly. You can give the kids a Dixie cup, but that placemat
better be ironed.
No wrinkles.
See, that's why mine are made of bamboo. You roll them up,
then
you roll them out, and they're beautiful, and that's all I have to do.
Kanani is about magic, like efficiency witchcraft. I think that is your tradition. They're going to say, what kind of tradition are you? And Kanani has been saying for years, I'm not a traditional witch, but now we know that what your tradition is. It's efficiency witchcraft.
It's efficiency.
Efficiency.
What gets the job done?
We'll call it efficiency and not laziness. I like
that. No, it's true. It's like, how many things can I do in one action?
How many things can I not do?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
If I do this one thing, will it accomplish other things? That's a win.
Like, yes, exactly.
I think we've just discovered a whole new line of products that Witch Life can offer. Exactly. Efficiency witchcraft when you are just too fucking lazy to do the whole goddamn thing.
Exactly. So. Lazy, tired, exhausted from chasing around two children. All those things. Very true.
Well, I had three witchcraft discoveries over the last couple of weeks. And the first one... So we record these episodes a few weeks in advance. So by the time I talk about this, it's going to be a little old news. But does everybody remember the Facebook uproar over Marie Kondo?
Oh, yeah.
And especially witches with that meme saying... no one should own more than 30 books, and witches went crazy. Well, Hillary came out to see me last week, and we went to trivia with some of my friends in town, and our team won, And then on the way home, Hillary starts telling me this really creepy ghost story that she experienced. And I'm listening because I love ghost stories. I'm eating this shit up. And then she drops me off, and it's like, bye! And I said, bye! And then I'm walking into my 100-year-old house alone, which is dark, and my husband is out of town, and I'm walking up to my house going, I'm not scared of my own house. No, I'm not. I am scared of my own house. So I need to put something on the Netflix that will not be anything supernatural because I'm already freaked out. So the one thing I thought that I could watch was the Marie Kondo show, which is a woman who comes into people's houses and she tidies them up. And there's been a lot of controversy over her because people say decluttering is classist and that it's elitist. And I'm very sensitive to that kind of stuff, but I got to be honest, I don't feel that way about Marie. First of all, she never says no one should own more than 30 books. She says let go of the things
that don't bring you joy. Some people have a library of 500 books. Right. No one is saying get rid of your 500. It just means like... Are there books that sit there that serve no purpose, that aren't referenced for you, that you don't even like?
That you keep telling yourself you're going to read, but 22 years ago,
and right, they're collecting dust.
I have a book that somebody gave me, and I felt really bad about parting with it, but it has a bad memory for me, because every single time I see that book, I think of the argument that we had in a car on the way home from the event where I bought it, and I've never read it.
Right.
And so, but I didn't want to give it away, because they wrote a note to me, and it's just... But that book, that show made me think I can let go. But she also has a lot of ways that you can organize your clothing and your things that are not expensive. Like she showed one family how to organize things in shoeboxes. Or things buying. One lady is a huge Christmas collector. So at no point did she say get rid of your Christmas collection. She just showed her how to organize it better. But here's why I think this show is good for witches. Is because Marie comes in and connects with the spirit of the house.
I love that.
Absolutely.
I love that.
And
we all know clutter, like mass clutter, it creates stagnant energy.
Exactly.
Yes. You know, so I mean, I'm like the worst. I'm like, oh, I like this. I travel around a lot and I collect things. And I've tried really, really hard to more and more integrate going through and letting go of things that don't serve me anymore, because otherwise it's like you have that closet that's full of clutter that's just collecting stagnant energy, and it's like someone else could use this thing. You can gift it. You can donate it. You could give it to a charity that could raise funds off of it. I mean, there's so many things that you can repurpose. I'm part of I know many people are part of like a buy nothing group on Facebook
right.
for a neighborhood where you're basically helping the community around you. So you can repurpose those things that are sitting there that serves the community as well.
I know a friend of mine who doesn't even consider herself a witch did a decluttering spell that ultimately brought her partner. I remember her going through her closet and pulling out clothes and giving them away. And she said, I am creating space so that somebody can store clothing here because I want love to come into my life. And she, after many years of having problems meeting someone, she met the man she's been with for as long as I've been with Brian, which is almost 10 years now. So
yeah.
There is an act to that. So anyway, people who are out there hating on Marie Kondo, give her a chance. She's not making you get rid of your books. And no, her methods don't work for everyone, but I think it's the approach to the spirit of the house.
And the spirit of items.
The spirit of items mm-hmm. that I think will be really helpful for witches that are trying to incorporate more magic into their lives. Something else, a book that I read last week. It's a new book that has recently come out. It's called The Witch's Book of Self-Care, and it's by Aaron Murphy Hiscock, and it's a really easy read. And it has like everything from magical spells for skincare to incenses that can use to relax and spells to battle stress. But what I like about it is Aaron really, I don't know Aaron's gender, but Aaron really and touches on the fact that self-care can be difficult for people that are really busy. And
oh, absolutely.
Yeah, and then Aaron,
it feels borderline impossible.
Yeah, and that self-care does not mean you have to go get
to a spa day.
A spa,
yeah,
right.
I think that people have. I talk about self-care a lot, both to friends of mine, but also in the performance art community, because you, especially when you're with ritual performance art or magic work or just performance in general, you give a lot of yourself. So
right.
I feel like I bark on to my students all the time about self-care. And the thing is it's like, I think people have this misconception that self-care is being able to go get a massage, doing this. I mean, sometimes I just go and do deep breathing, or I get some lavender and put it in a satchel under my pillow. There can be small things that you can
yeah.
integrate in that make a huge difference in keeping our stress levels down, especially when we're working with a lot of magic, replenishing ourselves, because it's taxing, you know?
It is taxing.
And I think it's really important to care for ourselves.
It is. And I went for years with not doing any self-care, and I went through an incredible period of burnout. And I blogged about this a couple of weeks ago, about how it took me almost 2 years to get my magic back after I was so completely depleted from taking tarot clients and taking magical students and doing magic for the community and doing magic for world bettering the world, whatever, and never doing anything for myself. So it right now there are so many issues that need witches, and there are so many people that need witches that we cannot afford to let ourselves get burned out. So it's a really good resource for people to have. But also something that is just for fun is my husband and I just watched this movie called The Little Hours, which is currently on Netflix.
I know you've told me about this like 3 times and I'm a jerk and still haven't watched
it. Oh, you are a jerk for
I
not
need
having
to.
Watched
I'm excited.
It.
Okay, I'm going to do it. I'm going to do it after I get done
it's,
with my
okay, so first of all, I need everybody to know that this movie is completely inappropriate. It makes nuns and witches look really bad. It has, and it's very un-PC.
I'm down.
I love it. It's so good. So it basically takes place in the Middle Ages, and there are these nuns. They're very young nuns, and they get really bored, and they discover witchcraft. That's all I'm going to
say. Wait a minute. I think I know what you're talking about. I have not watched it, but I think I saw
it's so irreverent. And again, please don't go in and get mad because of the way they're displaying witches. It's because they're also making nuns look terrible as well.
It's lighthearted.
So it's lighthearted. It's got Molly Shannon, John C. Reilly, the British chick from Girls.
I started watching that the other day. I didn't realize that. Okay,
yes.
I didn't put two and two together.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. And then Alison Brie from Glow and Mad Men, and the brunette girl from Garfunkel and Oates, and it's just really inappropriate. And I think we need some of that energy once in a while, just to laugh at ourselves.
Yeah.
And it's 90 minutes long, so you don't have to think about it. What did you think of it so far?
I thought it was really funny. I mean, having gone to Catholic school and like, I think it's, well, one, the actors and actresses that are in it are phenomenal. Like, they're people that I love already. And I thought the dynamics were hilarious.
Oh,
and
God.
It's kind of, yeah. I mean, it is totally inappropriate. And I definitely, if someone was like, oh, I want some films that inspire me to like learn about witchcraft,
this
that
would not,
is not
no.
be
this
the
would
one
not
that
be
I would
the
recommend.
One.
But it is always nice to watch a lighthearted comedy.
Oh, yeah. It's just, and I love really ridiculous humor, so I was very
I also like
so,
ridiculous
So anyway,
humor.
those are Coco's tools for the witch. You're welcome.
Well, here's one of the things that I like about stuff like this is these are just more ways that witchcraft is being presented to people. In a way that is fun. And every time you come at people in a way that is not scary or portraying this certain image of a witch, it just helps for people to gain more acceptance.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Just like you can hate the movie or you can hate the show Charmed and you can hate Sabrina and you can hate all these things, and Harry Potter, right? But it's
okay, well,
allowed things to.
Potter,
I know. Well, they're not good people. But, you know, it has allowed this kind of stuff to creep into mainstream mentalities and for them to be less fearful of it and for it to not this be this terrifying thing way.
Where they think like people are like cutting off goat heads.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Or, you know, doing all sorts of weird. You know.
So anytime I see stuff like this, I get super excited because I just think that it helps people to, you know, gain more acceptance and not be as wigged out if they hear someone say the word witch.
Right. And also, there's the flip side to that because there are plenty of witches who don't want to become mainstream. They don't
right.
want to
yes.
be accepted. And what people need to remember is that the popularity of witchcraft goes through cycles.
Yes,
for right sure. Now, right now, we're definitely in an upswing. There was definitely an upswing in the 90s. But I know that when I was a young witch wandering around in the early 2000s, people were kind of rolling their eyes like, oh, didn't you leave that behind in the 90s?
Yeah.
And one of my teachers talked about how there was a big surge in witchcraft late 70s, early 80s. And there was it's like every 20 years
and
or
I
so.
And I think that's
yeah.
true of other belief systems as well, where mm-hmm. like, whatever is calling people in the world, it's like it becomes something that people are interested in and more interested in. And so, I mean, I think that, yeah, I think some, I do understand people going, well, I don't want it to be this like kitschy thing. And I do understand it's disheartening to some people to see like people
$60 sage bundles
yes,
at Anthropology.
Yeah, yeah, and like just kind of people preying on people's interest in that from a capitalist perspective. But
right.
But I also think that when it's, I think there's some benefit to it being more out in the open because I think that then you're not walking around and you say, oh, I'm a witch or I practice witchcraft and people aren't like, are you eating children in a closet? I mean, like, you know, it's like
yeah.
people have the weirdest.
I was going to say, there's a phenomenally huge benefit and that is that if my kids mention something at school, I can be a little less fearful of the adults around them giving them side eye or having them tell their own children, you can't play with those kids
yeah.
because they practice magic. Like that is still very much a real thing.
Right.
Yeah, for sure.
And so for me, all of these things that make things more open and accessible, I'm all about because it allows me to have more hope for my children to not have to be so nervous about their friends hearing things or learning things about my children or my children's mother and to not have other people, you know, like I said, give them side eye or be like, yeah, you can't play with them.
Or either think it's a negative thing or think it's a silly thing, right?
Right.
So one or the other, those are often the misconceptions like, oh, are you like doing evil stuff or you're dressing up in a costume, you know, that
you're
kind
misguided,
of, you're misguided,
yeah, you're
you just
full
don't,
of superstition.
Yeah, right.
And not,
yeah. And not. And so, I mean, I agree. I think, you know, I do totally honor and understand the perspective of, you know, not wanting it to be commercialized. And I think there is totally relevance in that. But I also think it is nice to see more representation of witches and witchcraft in popular culture, because I think that in general, it makes witches easy. It makes it easier for witches to exist in the world, you know,
exactly.
in general.
Yeah, it takes the fear out.
Yeah.
One of the biggest drivers of fear in societies is ignorance.
Yeah.
And not understanding.
Misunderstanding.
If you honestly believe that witches sacrifice children, then you are not going to want your children
to be around
someone who claims to be a witch. That's just the reality. If you can educate people to understand, you know, what this might mean, or, you know, a lot of these people practice an earth-based faith and, you know, they work in gardens and they're very sweet and they're very kind and these are your next door neighbors, then suddenly it takes the fear and the prejudice out of it.
We're also in this period of his time when things get, people run away with stuff out of fear.
Yes.
You see these trends on social media all the time when people get on a bandwagon, they're angry at someone, and sometimes it's absolutely right. Sometimes they've got the wrong person.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's a misunderstanding of what happened.
Yeah.
And
or so, a spread of really bad spread of misinformation.
Exactly. Or something's taken out of context.
Yeah.
Oh, I can't tell you how many great authors, witchcraft or not, get in trouble because of one little thing that they said that was taken completely out of context. And suddenly like with Marie Kondo.
Yeah.
People are saying really violent things. We're saying very violent things about this woman because she was encouraging people to get rid of stuff they're not using anymore.
Right.
Or that they don't want anymore.
Well, and again, I think they miss the fact that getting rid of it isn't throwing it in a landfill. It's repurposing it and gifting and, you know, I mean, there are many ways to repurpose that don't involve being wasteful. And I think that people missed that point.
Right. And I also respect that there are, some of my friends talked to me about this, saying that they grew up very, very poor. And so the idea of giving things away is difficult for them. And I think what I was saying to that is, but she's also saying you don't have to get rid of your things. You can reorganize them. But it was that mindset of, this is classes, this is elitist, don't make me give away my things, that, and people actually calling for violence against this woman, which was really uncomfortable.
Which is really
out of line. Yeah. Uncomfortable is a minimize. It was really, and so I think that, for people, so I would bring this back, saying that people like get anxious, saying, "Well, I don't want witchcraft to go to the mainstream." Well, you can't control that, and people are leaving mainstream religions in droves, and human beings as a whole put their faith in some things. People that are atheists are putting their faith in science. Science is something that sometimes you do have to put your faith in, because it doesn't always, you know, not every medical treatment is going to work for every ailment.
Yeah.
Even with as much scientific research as possible, it may not work for one person. So even then, there's a leap of faith there.
Yeah.
By the way,
it's also faith in the practitioner.
Faith in the practitioner,
that
they know what they're doing. So there's always going to be a bit of faith, or putting faith in a political leader that they're going to follow through with what they said they're going to follow through. So all of these things. But what I'm saying is that starting to get angry about mainstreaming of witchcraft, I think that it could be really important right now and really safe, especially in areas of the country where there is more hostility toward witches.
Absolutely.
I've been very lucky living in Oregon and living in New York City, where it's either more accepting or people just don't care.
They just don't care. They're like, you do you.
But right,
whatever,
I've traveled some places in the South where people get their houses attacked, or their shop windows get smashed because they practice witchcraft, or they're rumored to practice witchcraft. So these things, like being silly, I don't know that the little hours is the best depiction. However, I think it gives us permission to laugh at ourselves. And, you know, it's not always a bad thing.
Yeah.
No, and the reality is I do feel like we are in, especially, I think, in my opinion, one of the reasons that people are really going to witchcraft, Wicca, paganism, earth-based religions, is because I think that people are starting to connect with the damage that is being done to the earth.
Yes.
Yes, absolutely.
And I feel like there is a very primal part of all of us that understands, whether, no matter how selfish we speak or how selfish someone lives, there is a primal part of them that understands that they are part of something larger,
mm-hmm.
and that there is a certain personal responsibility to making sure that the world around them is okay. And so I feel like that primal piece of people is just kind of starting to really spark, and they're starting to look at the world in a much more, I am connected to this kind of way. And I really think that that's what's helping to bring people to these kind of faiths, because they're connecting with the fact that they are a part of this. We are all a part of this.
And it's something that they can do on a personal level because sometimes I think, you know, if they feel like they can't take action themselves, they feel stagnant, they feel like they can't do something. So I think people are drawn to elements of faith or elements of practice that allows them to take physical personal action. And I think that witchcraft allows that in people. So
absolutely. I think it encourages it. I think it encourages you to connect with the divine and or nature spirits or whatever you want to call it. It encourages you to connect with that.
Yeah.
And to respect the earth and respect nature. And I think that's one of the reasons why people are really just kind of like, hey, I really like this.
Right. Nothing ever has gotten changed in this world without a change of heart and spirit.
Absolutely.
Right? We do need our laws to be to be stronger against pollution. We do need to have serious carbon curb limits. But at the same time, without the ingrained belief that this is the morally imperative thing that's right to do, it's not going to happen on its own.
Yeah.
So part of, you know, how we're talking about connecting with nature and connecting with the divine and things like that, that people are really sparking interest to and seeking, I think this is a good way to kind of talk about how goddess, you know, has impacted our life. Because to me, goddess and nature and all that is very interconnected. And to me, she's the same. So how did that kind of impact your life and how you came to practicing magic?
It's so funny. I've talked about this, my witchcraft is highly deity centered. It's so strange because I remember being a very new witch and in the lounge or the lobby of our high school and saying to someone, I would be a witch, but I don't believe in the goddess. And that to me now seems so strange because all of my witchcraft is centered around deities, but especially goddesses. And I think what the big thing that helped me get out of the Judeo-Christian concept of this either genderless or very male god was actually a Scott Cunningham book. And the whole book didn't resonate with me, but there was something toward the end, and I don't remember which one, it was probably Wicca for the Solitary Practitioner. And it said toward the end, everything in nature is multigendered. Why would the divine be any different? And to that, to me, helped me get out of the mindset, my trap, I would say that I was in, that God is a man and only a man. And I realized that doesn't make any sense for so many things in this world to be multigendered and God not being. So I don't work with this overall ubiquitous goddess. I work with individual goddesses. At the same time, I also understand they sometimes can coalesce into one. There are people out there who call themselves hard polytheists and soft polytheists. Soft polytheists believing that all the gods are one and hard polytheists believing that they're all very separate. Very loose interpretation of what that means. And I consider myself semi-hard. I approach the gods and goddesses as if they are different beings. But just kind of like you approach me, Hillary, and Kanani, we're three very different people. But if you get all of us together, you're going to feel one force of whatever insanity. The hell we are.
Chaos.
So it's also, I can't blame you if you think of us all as one person. It's kind of true, and it's also kind of not. And I just compared ours to goddesses, which means I'm probably going to slip on dog shit on the way home. So.
Yeah. I similarly starting out really didn't, I was not drawn to this same thing because I was coming out of a Judeo-Christian kind of background of seeing God as male or as a man. And I think that I just in general kind of just went, oh, I don't know. Again, it was in this path of me going like, I don't even know what I'm doing. I'm just doing whatever feels right to me. But what really I think drew me in was, you know, finding my own, like it, within myself, feeling strength as a woman and being drawn towards deities that were also women because, you know, growing up, you're like the church hierarchy was male. The heads of the church were men. God was a man. And so I was just like, what the hell is this? Like, you know what? Like, I feel like women are equally, if not sometimes more powerful than men and totally undervalued. So I think I got really drawn specifically to the idea of goddess and then really drawn towards individual goddesses. I also am drawn more towards particular deities rather than kind of the overall overarching sense of goddess. So I think that, and I tend to look to them for different things and different purposes. and ask for different things and work with them in individual ways based on them individually and kind of what they draw in particular, but also kind of how they like to be worked with.
Yeah. And like me and a lot of witches I know, the journey to finding what some say a patron deity is, that one deity is one you really bond with. And some people have more than one. I also have more than one, but I find also that sometimes one comes forward more than the others, and that those deities really help guide the course of your life. I know for me, my main goddess is Bridget. And I know when I really accepted her, it makes me sound like a born again Christian. When I really accepted Bridget into my heart, she took away all that was ugly in me. But well, she did. And she got rid of, within 24 hours of me saying, this is my goddess, she goes, okay, great, your relationship is gone, little idiot, because that guy is not for you, but I got you a new one coming. And it did reshape the course of my life because I did that. And for some people, there's also this sense in witchcraft, I see people saying many gods, no masters, and I completely understand why that would be appealing, knowing that gods can come in and tear up your life. I find that it's ultimately for good, but it can be really jarring in the meantime.
For sure. Sometimes we don't really realize when things are shifting, at first you're going like, what the hell is this disaster, you know? And then all of a sudden you're like, oh, right. When everything plays out in the end, you see how this led to this, led to this, led to this. Because sometimes transformation or sometimes, you know, growth is painful. You know, it's not always, the growth maybe ends in a positive light, but getting there is sometimes a very painful process. So
absolutely. So we have a very exciting special guest.
Yay!
She is our first in-person guest on the show. Her name is Frodo Oaklum, and she obtained her doctorate in ministry from San Francisco Theological Seminary and Merrillhurst University, a master's in theology from Mount Angel Seminary, and has been an assistant professor with the Women's Studies Department of Portland State University since 2000.
Yeah.
So welcome.
Wow. You know,
so happy to have you
and
here.
And she's actually brave enough to come into a basement with us.
I know.
Which I understand. She's like, you know what? I'm just gonna call in. Yeah.
But you walk in, it looks rough, and then you walk into the space, and you're like, oh, okay, it looks like a normal room in this part. Yeah.
Well, I arrived, I was wearing my raccoon hat with ears, and I walked in and everybody else had ears.
I must be in the right place.
I don't think we've even told people that Courtney and I
made a mistake in making a joke because she knew I was going to take it very seriously.
I knew that Courtney and I have a funny inside joke about pigs. And so I saw some pig ears and I thought, oh, we should wear ears. That's so fun. I went to pick up a third one for Kanani and I was like, nope, the pig ears just don't seem correct. And then I turn and there's like totally rainbow sequined ears with a unicorn horn.
That's
and
my
I was
jam.
Like, ding, ding, ding.
That's
so
my
now
jam.
Kanani is in the unicorn ears and Courtney and I are in pig ears that are also very glittery. So it's just kind of a fun way for us to
when
get
you
into
listen
the zone.
To us. This is what's happening.
This
is our
happening.
Uniform.
This is our uniform.
Exactly. Anyway, Frodo.
So I found out I was even a little bit underdressed.
That's right. That's right. Your raccoon ears fit right in. I actually have this great story of I went a couple years ago to go watch a roller derby game for my birthday with some friends. And one of my friends brought his cousin. And somehow, whenever people see my fairy necklace, they always start talking to me about the fae or magic or paganism. And they start talking about things that they don't even understand. And they don't know why they're telling me these things, but they are. And she started telling me about, oh, I love your fairy necklace. And I said, oh, thank you. And she goes, yeah. She goes, I actually took a paganism class at Portland State University. And it was one of my favorite classes. And I said, oh, really? And she goes, yeah. And she goes, believe it or not. She goes, the professor who taught the class, her name was Frodo. And I laughed and I said, oh, I know Frodo. And she looked at me like, okay. And I pulled out my phone and I pulled out my Facebook page and I go, is this your professor? And she goes, oh, that's my professor. That's Frodo. And all of a sudden she kind of like, I think, scooted away from me a little bit. Like, who is this girl? How do you know her?
Well, sometimes, I remember when I was in seminary, somebody said, oh, I don't want to assume that you all know each other, but do you know? Oh, yeah, I know Valerie. And they're like, they said, no, we probably all do.
Yeah. It's a big, small community.
Yeah.
If you're around Portland very long,
you're going to meet.
You're gonna know people who know people.
Yes, exactly. So she is here to kind of talk to us about her studies involving all things the goddess. And she actually teaches a class at Portland State University right now called The Goddess. And in the class, they explore the idea of the prehistoric goddess and who she is for us today, and the evolution. And I was just kind of hoping you could talk to us about that a little bit.
Well, let me say first that the class at PSU is actually four different classes in one called Topics in Feminist Spirituality. And the four parts are the goddess, women's spirituality, feminist biblical interpretation,
nice,
and ecofeminist spirituality. So depending on what term it is, it's a different class, but they're all related. So they put me on rotation between the goddess and ecofeminist. So this last fall, it was the ecofeminist spirituality class. Next fall, we'll be running the goddess.
So, and what do you kind of, like, what do people learn in that class?
It started out as a little one-credit class on goddess prehistory. So, you know, who is the prehistoric goddess? And, you know, how did that go on? And then I realized that really we need to go on into history after there's writing that you can read,
mm-hmm.
So that we can show there's a continuity. And so it moved into first two weekends and then a full term four-credit class. So now it's just called The Goddess because it's past, present, and future, the whole realm of the feminine divine from the beginning.
When do you teach about, like, the beginnings of the goddess?
One of the great experiences that my classes have had in the early years of this class, one of our speakers, we were really gifted to have Barbara Moore as one of our speakers. So she, The Great Cosmic Mother is her book, beginning. So she took this marker and started at one end of the room. And there happened to be, you know, whiteboards on every wall. And she made this line all the way around. And so here is 200,000 before the Common Era, BC or BCE. There's, you know, evidence of humans doing ritual, burying people with red ochre in their graves. And then, here about 35,000 BCE, we get human figures and their goddess figures. So here's the goddess. And then you get to the Neolithic. You come on to the agricultural age. You get into then when the Bronze Age comes on the scene, 5,000 BC or so. I'm not good with numbers, so check these, Google them. Anyway, then you get goddesses and gods more equally, and warfare comes in. Organized warfare. And then, you know, it doesn't become really exclusively or almost exclusively male deities until, you know, 2,000 years ago or less. So, wow, you know, all this time, God was a woman. Yeah. I mean, all this time. And then the divinity was both, all genders, and always divinity was all genders, but the primary image has been female for so much of human history. And, you know, this last little bit where it's all patriarchal is just a tiny little blip. And when they see that, the great timeline, Barbara Moore calls it, you realize, whoa, you know, why didn't we know this? Why weren't we told this? Why did we get all the way to graduate school in some cases? And we've never heard this, right? Or seen it. This, when they see that map, you know, of time and realize, wow, you know, it has not always been this way.
When was it in your life that you embraced the goddess or decided, you know, that that was a part of your path in your life? When did you determine that you were a magical being or a witch?
Well, my name is Frodo. So that was not my birth name. It started out at camp, at summer camp. When we had a little Tolkien society at summer camp. And I had a button that said Frodo Lives. Oh. So some of the other kids started calling me Frodo Freak. And I said, well, you can call me Frodo. So I embraced the name Frodo.
I love that.
From that. And I was probably maybe seventh grade.
Wow.
Right around in there.
So
around that time, I was beginning to spiritually seek. I didn't think that the Bible was for me because I already was beginning to know that I was a lesbian. I was attracted to women. And I thought then that the Bible said that was not okay. I've done a lot of biblical research since then. That's why that biblical class. But at the time,
yeah.
So I thought, okay, well, if it's not this, what is it, you know? And I tried praying to Elbereth, who is the queen of the stars, she who lit the stars in the Lord of the Rings. And the elves pray to Elbereth. She hears their cries. She's listening. And it worked. I mean, the still small voice inside spoke to me. And so then I was like, well, are you really there? Is this just wishful thinking? So I said, well, show me a sign.
We always want proof.
I want to prove.
Yes.
Yeah. So she would say things like, well, go outside before dawn, which is not my thing, by the way, then or now. Go outside before dawn and look to the east. So I did, and there was, in the Lord of the Rings parlance, Arendil, and in our world, the planet Venus.
Oh, yes.
Huge and bright and beautiful
right there.
You know. And so, I guess you are there.
Yeah.
Things like that would happen over and over. And at one point, she saved my life. And as a young lesbian, there comes times when you just think, okay, there's no future. And I was at one of those points like that. And she said, you can do that if you want to, but don't you know I made you just the way you are for a reason, and I have plans for your life.
So amazing.
Yeah. And I would not have thought that. And I was like, what?
You're like, what?
But I
How
could,
powerful.
I could relate that to Frodo being gifted with the ring and going, okay, I will take the ring, though I do not know the way, because you don't know what's going to come up. And
well, like you're saying, at that age, that's not a message that was coming out in society.
No one was telling young
lesbian or gay individuals that they were made that way and that's okay.
No one.
Even us in the 90s, we were in high school in the 90s,
the 1960s,
right?
So I can't even imagine
how powerful that message would have been to hear.
Yes, so I embraced Elbereth as my goddess. And she's not technically a goddess in the Lord of the Rings. She's the Valar are powers, so they're like what would be called angels or orishas, they might as well be goddesses and gods because they have that function in that world. There's one creator who is Eru, the One, just called the One, but then there's all these others, and Elbereth really. When you think about it, I mean, even in the charge of the goddess, hear the words of the star goddess, the dust of whose feet are the hosts of heaven, whose body encircles the universe. Well, that is what happened.
Yes.
I mean, that is.
Literally what happened.
We were born out of the womb of darkness into light, and that's where all this stuff comes from, our bodies and the world and everything. So she's my primary goddess. And then, you know, from that, I kept that to myself because I knew people would think I was making a fictional book into a religion, and that would be weird.
Oh, because that's never happened ever in the history of any religions.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Right.
Exactly.
Yeah, we won't name names. But anyway, so I didn't want to have that whole reaction. Well, then I found somebody else who the same thing was true of. Steve Marshall, who is the bishop of the Queen of Heaven Gnostic Church here in Portland. And he and I both Well, I knew his name, having never met him. And, you know, I mean, we just had this connection. So I began to talk about my spirituality, and, you know, we had similar experiences. And last night I just did a tarot reading with the cards that he gave me at that time.
Oh, wow.
I was like, wow.
So awesome.
Anyway, so I didn't know there was anybody else until when I was in college. I met Steve, T.O. I call him, when we were in college. So then, not too long after that, in the Women's Union at PSU, Portland State University, which I was going to school there. Now I'm teaching.
Wow, that's awesome. I went to PSU.
I also went to PSU.
Oh, that's right, you did.
Yay. Yay. First 2 years of college was PSU.
Okay.
Yay. So then there was a magazine on the shelf in the Women's Union called Woman Spirit. And I thought, what's that about? That looks interesting. Well, I opened it. And Jean Mountain Grove was saying in the magazine, I'm on a journey back into the past, forward into the future, down into my center. And I thought, wow, you know, I'm on this journey too. Tell me about it.
Yeah.
And the writers were, the women writing in the magazine were talking about the goddess. And I was like, oh. There's other people out there. Yeah. In fact, there's a long, ancient tradition. And tell me more, tell me more. And I didn't meet other people to practice with until they did, Woman Spirit came to do an issue of the magazine here in Portland. It was published in Southern Oregon. But they came to Portland for an issue, and that's when I connected with my first women's goddess circle.
How amazing to feel like this is something that's just you, no one else gets this, and then you meet a group of people that are on a like-minded path. Like, that's
so.
That's something to me that we take for granted in this generation, that it is accessible, it's happened, it's been talked about, we can find it, we can seek it.
But to stumble into it.
To stumble into it and have to literally find it as it's kind of creating itself is amazing.
And early on, that was happening here in this area. I think the earliest university class about the goddess was at PSU. Back in the 80s, Jeffrey Ash, who edited the Arthurian Encyclopedia, a wonderful scholar of many things, did a class on the history of the goddess through the history department at PSU. And I was a speaker at that class, so I came to know about it. And sort of one of the little seeds that that my class and the goddess came out of. But it was early on. And we're already talking about the goddess here. Jeffrey lives in Glastonbury, England. So there's that connection to Glastonbury and, you know, Glastonbury Tor and that whole tradition.
So you are a major part of Sister Spirit, which is a local organization for women's spiritual studies and things of that nature. I am president of Other Worlds of Wonder, which is another pagan nonprofit. So we host a lot of events. You guys host a lot of events. So we know of each other. We see each other at events. We see each other around community. We see each other all the time. I've always known that you were a founder member of Sister Spirit, and have always just thought that was really cool. Well, in doing a little more research before you came, I found that you were not a founder member of Sister Spirit. You started it. You actually created this entire organization. How did that come about?
Well, it began with a dream. I was, you know, asleep at night, and I dreamed that there were some women who had a circle, a Dianic Wiccan, which means the goddess is primary, circle, and it was a circle of stones by a river, and they said, we have to go on a trip, would you guard our circle while we're gone? And I said, okay. So I was in the circle, and these other women came up and wanted to use the circle, and I said, well, are you Dianic Wiccans? Well, no, we are Christians and Jews. And I said, oh, well, I don't know if you can use this circle, because it's a Wiccan circle, but I'll help you find a place. So we walked all up and down the course of this river, and there wasn't any place. And when we got back to the original circle, the Wiccan women were back from their trip, and they were in the circle, and I said, I think this means we're supposed to celebrate together. So they invited us in, and everybody had a circle. And it was goddess-centered, and people bringing whatever was valuable to them in their traditions, whatever they were. So I thought, wow, that was a nice dream. I better write it down. You know, and then all these signs started to happen, that synchronicities that told me maybe this isn't just a dream. Maybe it's something I'm supposed to do. So I started to talk to other women and found there was a need for a grove, really, not just a coven, but a larger circle that was multi-tradition. So our elevator talk, one sentence definition, let me see if I can get it right because it's a long sentence. Sister Spirit is a women's circle celebrating the goddess and nature through female imagery in many traditions. So that's what we are, and that's what we began as in 1985.
You guys have a big event coming up in March, correct?
Yes. So we decided early on that we're a women's circle, but women don't exist in a vacuum. There's whole communities full of lots of other people. And so let's do something that gives out to that larger community. And it's also a fundraiser, so that's a good thing too. I had been to England and I visited, which there named Sean of the House of the Goddess. And she said, well, we run our whole program, our whole organization on one event. That's a fair, you know, and we thought, we could do this. Yeah. So that's when we had the idea to do Pagan Fair, which is a spring equinox festival. It's a one-day festival right around spring equinox, but on the weekend, so people can come. And that was, I wrote down the year, in 1991, I think.
Was the first Pagan Fair? Wow.
And, it was 19.
And it's going to be Sunday, March 24th, from 11 to 5, at the Historic Dance Hall at Oaks Park in Portland, Oregon.
Yes. And Oaks Park's a really great place because it feels like a fair.
Yes.
And people go there for Pagan Pride. Yes. So they're used to the place.
And it's old, historic Portland. Like, yeah. It's old. It has a lot of history
there.
It has
a ton of history.
I'm trying to remember, but I think that dance hall is one of the oldest buildings still in Portland.
Sense. Well, and saying for listeners who are not in the Portland area, Google or look up Spring Equinox gatherings in your area.
Absolutely.
Facebook is often a really good way to find this kind of stuff.
It is a really good
resource. Because Spring Equinox draws out the witches. The springtime magic makes us want to get out and start making things happen. Yes. Our next episode will be talking about springtime magic, which is exciting.
Which is really exciting, yeah.
So one of the things that we do at the end of every podcast, and I'm gonna talk to you about, is we did kind of a play on words where instead of as above, so below, we do
So below, as above.
Yeah, okay, I get it wrong.
She came up with it.
I came up with it, and I get it wrong. So one of the things we do is we talk about something that has happened either very recently or in the near recent time that that we want to let go of, and something that we are wanting to work on or that we're wanting to bring into our life. So Courtney, you want to start with that?
Yes. So.
Oh, and then we write it down, and we put it in the cauldron.
And then light on fire.
And then we burn it later.
So, I am letting go of some old resentment and anger. And I know I talked to both Kanani and Hillary about this last week. A lot of issues that I had with some resentment of my past role came up pretty strongly. And I was really struggling to get past it. And my husband was saying something like, let it go. And I said, it's not about letting it go, but I've got to get through it. I don't want to carry it, but just, it's not something I can drop. It's something I have to pass through. And so I was working very hard on it. And finally I got to a place where I said, I'm resentful for about the time that I felt was misused and abused. I will not let any more of my time be abused and misused by So that helped me, I think, part the ways through the anger. It's kind of like when you have a really tight muscle in your shoulder and you just feel for a day or two, it's really, really tight. And then it starts to loosen up and loosen up. But sometimes it still catches. So I'm in a place where a lot of it is loosened up, but sometimes it still catches. So I'm letting that go slowly. And what I'm bringing in, hopefully, is a new puppy. We've got an application out to adopt this really cute puppy, and I hope we can. So moat that shit. In the cauldron you go.
So for me, I think a few episodes ago, I had had a really bad allergic reaction. I had another really bad allergic reaction, and I'm fine. I've survived. It was not as bad. But one of the things that I find myself getting caught up in is getting really frustrated with my body. Like, this is pissing me off. Like, I'm so frustrated with, and then when I don't recoup immediately, I get frustrated that I'm like not recouping fast enough. So I'm letting go of unreasonable expectations for my body and bringing in acceptance and also, encouragement to rather than focusing on what isn't working, but also celebrating what is and yes. All the things that are working, that work really well every day rather than focusing on the one obnoxious, stupid thing that annoys me. So it's kind of letting go of that and bringing in, you know, acceptance of health and body.
I am trying to... I have a lot that I do. I have a lot of running around that I do. I work. I have two children. I am actively a part of their lives. They have after school activities. It can be incredibly, incredibly stressful. And I have started buying audiobooks so that when I'm driving and I spend more time than I want to going from point A to point B, I'm actually enjoying it. And I feel like I'm actually relaxing going from point A to point B instead of being more stressed about gotta get there. And so I feel like I'm letting go of that really tense kind of have to feeling, and I'm trying to just kind of enjoy what I'm doing, which is a big transition because I realized that is where a great deal, majority of my stress was coming from, is the stress of going from point A to point B. So to make that a not stressful time has been really, really beneficial. So that's kind of, I'm letting go and then I'm bringing in, you know, the knowledge of these books. And sometimes it's something fun. Sometimes it's, you know, something that I want to learn about. And so that's kind of what I'm trying to bring in a little bit more knowledge and let go of that stress.
Pen. Scribble. Cauldron.
Wow, all of those things I resonate with. I suppose the biggest thing I want to let go of is always old tapes. And it occurs to me we may not call them that in the future, but anyway, they might be old podcasts.
Yeah. Delete from library.
You know, things that people have said that have hurt. And, you know, people have said, well, why don't you just erase that email? Well, the email is in here. You know, it's in my heart. It's in my mind. And, okay, so you take it off the, you know, you don't play it anymore. That's why it's called an old tape, right? Yeah. But I'll see something or I'll hear something and my mind will just go and it'll play the whole thing over again. And I'd like to get better at interrupting that, to come back to the moment, you know, and not play those negative tapes anymore.
Yes, absolutely.
So what am I bringing in? Well, like you... I have a new kitten. His name is Sunny, and he arrived in September. So, I mean, that was really good for me because I was in grief over my familiar who had passed. Yeah. And, you know, I don't think we just get over grief by having a new person.
Right, right.
But I didn't have my own special familiar, although we have five cats.
Yeah.
This Sunny's the fifth. So anyway, that's been a joy and a challenge for me. We like to talk in Sister Spirit about herding cats. H-E-R-D-I-N-G.
Yes.
Like, you know, how do you get cats to go in the same direction? Yes. You don't, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Open a can of tuna fish.
Yeah, that's right. Or with a kitten, you know, you pull something slowly.
Yeah.
Anyway, the other, about a week or two ago, I was given the opportunity to help some geese across a road. And it was funny when I got to my women's spirituality class and I said, well, I was late because I was helping some geese cross the road.
Adorable.
And they're all laughing. But I was on my bike. I bike commute from my house way out by 102nd to PSU. So it's quite a commute.
That is quite a
commute. And I was coming up onto the Broadway Bridge and there were these geese and they were trying to cross Broadway.
Oh my gosh.
Okay.
No,
so they walk out a little bit and then they go back and then they walk out a little bit and they're the same color as the road. And I just thought somebody's going to get hurt here.
Yeah.
So I was in my bright, you know, bike jacket. So I went out and stopped the traffic and you know, ushered the
from now on, if you're ever late to an event, I'm going to be like, don't worry. No, she's just a geese. She's helping geese.
She's helping the geese.
She's helping geese.
Yeah. Anyway, so they were successful in crossing the road. But you never know when your gifts, you know, as a witch or a magical person who's in touch with the earth, mm-hmm. are going to be called upon by some being or beings, you know, who are asking for help, which reminds me, I used the word usher. That's one of the words. I forgot to say that Pagan Fair's theme this year is Bridget and the Fae Usher in the Spring.
Oh, I love that.
And, you know, we don't usually think about Bridget as a spring equinox goddess. She's more like at Imbolc.
But Imbolc is a springtime holiday.
Yeah.
You know,
that's the beginning
spring.
Of the spring then. And already in my yard, things are starting to poke up out of the ground. We haven't had a hard freeze,
right.
And they're going,
yeah,
we can get up now.
Yeah.
Anyway, so
we are so excited.
Oh, I forgot to
put it in the cauldron. Yeah.
Put it in the cauldron.
So I would like to get better at herding cats.
Awesome. That's awesome.
Love
and
it.
And both figuratively and literally.
That's right.
Literally.
That's right. So mote that be.
So mote that be.
All right. Thank you guys for joining us again. And Frodo, thank you so
thank
much for
you
being
so
our,
much,
first,
Frodo.
Thank
our
you.
First
lovely.
Live guest. It was amazing. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Bye.
Join us on the first and third Mondays of the month for magical tools, tips, and stories about living as a witch in today's world.
Find us at thatwitchlife.com for archived episodes or to ask your burning questions for us to answer in future.